Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and on the web at kfai.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and 106.7 in St. Paul. This is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman.
This program will inspire you, inform you, feed you healthy recipes, engage you politically, enlighten you spiritually. Help me name it. I'm no longer doubtful of what I'm living for. And if I make you happy, I don't need to do more. Cause you make me feel.
Good evening. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis, and we're streaming online at kfai.org. And this is Health Notes from the Hearts of a Natural Woman, and I'm Kinshasha. This evening, we're going to be talking about the contributions of some amazing African and African-American women. Some you might know, some you might not know. So sit back, enjoy, and we're going to start by talking about Marion Wright Edelman.
Marion Wright was born on June 6, 1939, in Bennettsville, South Carolina.
It was the defining force in my life. I grew up in a segregated rural town that told me as a black girl that I wasn't very valuable, but I didn't believe it. And I always knew that I would make a difference in changing it. I always had to test the limits. I can't stand being told I can't do something, and I can't stand seeing any children excluded from anything. So the seeds of much of what I do at the Children's Defense Fund grew out of what happened in Bennettsville.
Wright attended Spelman College in Atlanta from 1957 to 1960, an urgent time in the civil rights movement. She quickly became deeply involved.
One day, out of the sit-in movement, I went down to the local NAACP office to volunteer, and I saw all of these complaints that had come in from poor black people all over Georgia that no lawyer could respond to because they didn't have the money and there weren't enough lawyers. And I asked myself, what in the world am I doing? Thinking about, as I was at the time, going to study 19th century Russian literature. I didn't want to teach. I wanted to stay in the South. And although I absolutely hated law school and hate the law, it was clear that what was needed was lawyers.
In 1960, Wright enrolled at Yale Law School, the epicenter of the Northern Student Civil Rights Movement. After she graduated in 1963, her dedication to political activism led her to Mississippi, a notoriously violent hotbed of racial strife. She went to work in the NAACP Legal Defense Fund office in Jackson, Mississippi, becoming the first black woman to practice law in the state. The young activist was shocked by the profound destitution she encountered in the communities of the Mississippi Delta. At the same time, the issue of American poverty was rising on the national agenda.
This administration today, here and now, declares unconditional war on poverty in America.
Though alleviating poverty was not Wright's only cause, she felt it demanded the greatest urgency. By the mid-60s, she had become well known as an advocate for Mississippi's poor. In March 1967, Wright testified before the Senate Subcommittee on Employment, Manpower, and Poverty. She persuaded the committee members to visit Mississippi and hear testimonials from poor residents of the state. Appalled by the degree of privation they witnessed in Mississippi, the committee members returned to Washington and pushed through legislation introducing free food stamps and expanding free school meal programs. Senator Robert Kennedy, especially, became a vocal proponent of child welfare services. But by the end of that year, Wright faced a major hurdle.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam.
In the wake of the Tet Offensive, America's eyes were on the conflict in Vietnam, and the issue of hunger at home was quickly crowded off the headlines. Then, on April 4, 1968, Wright's friend and fellow advocate for the poor, Martin Luther King Jr., was assassinated. Just 2 months later, Robert Kennedy, too, was murdered. Though devastated by the deaths of these two great men, Wright resolved to carry on their work. America's poor had lost two of their strongest allies. Now it was up to her to be their champion. In the summer of 1968, she married Peter Edelman, whom she'd met in Mississippi when he served as Robert Kennedy's legislative assistant.
The movement simply took new forms after 1968. The advocacy that I'm doing today on behalf of children is a direct result of what went on in the late 60s, but it was very clear that we had to develop new strategies, new ways of framing issues, new ways of tapping into the broader self-interest so that whites would perceive it as their self-interest. It has always been in their self-interest to deal with issues of race and class, and so we began to talk about children rather than poor adults, and to talk about prevention and to show the ways in which the deprivations that black and poor children face also affect middle class and non-poor children and white children.
In 1973, Marion Wright Edelman founded the Children's Defense Fund, the first special interest group dedicated to children. The CDF, an advocacy and research center for children's issues, investigates consequences of and solutions to childhood poverty. They produce research that shows practical, economic reasons for investing in poor children. The Children's Defense Fund's data-driven, child-focused approach has made it the leading child advocacy organization in the country. As its founder and leader, Marion Wright Edelman has been a powerful advocate for children for over 40 years. The many laws and programs Wright Edelman has successfully fought for through the Children's Defense Fund include an Anti-Discrimination Act for handicapped children, a bill for child care and expanded tax credits for low-income families, expansion of free school meal programs, expansion of anti-teen pregnancy programs in high schools, the Family and Medical Leave Act, increased funds for the free immunization of uninsured children, and the Head Start program.
People often ask me, how in the world do you keep doing this year after year, and why did you ever choose to do this? I said, it never occurred to me not to do it, and it wouldn't occur to me ever to give up.
Inside.
We're celebrating International Women's Day on Health Notes this evening by sharing the bios and contributions of incredible African and African American women. The poems of Nikki Giovanni helped to define the African American voice of the 60s and 70s and beyond. She was a major force in the Black arts movement. Nikki Giovanni was born on June 7th, 1943. She established Cincinnati's first Black arts festival in 1967. She published her first book of poems, Black Feeling, Black Talk, in 1968. Nikki Giovanni was born on June 7th, 1943, in Knoxville, Tennessee. Nikki is a prominent poet and writer who first caught the public's attention as a part of the Black arts movement of the late 60s. Growing up in the Cincinnati area, she often visited Knoxville to see family, especially her maternal grandmother. After graduating with honors from Fisk University in 1967, she returned to Cincinnati and established the city's first Black arts festival. She also began writing the poems that are included in her first self-published volume, Feeling Black, Black Talk, 1968. By the mid-70s, Nikki had established herself as one of the leading poetic voices. She won a number of awards, including Woman of the Year from Ladies' Home Journal in 1973. She also made several television appearances, including the African American Arts and Culture show, Soul. During the 80s, she continued to publish and spent much of her time touring and attending speaking engagements. She also found time to teach at College Mount St. Joseph and Virginia Tech University, where she still works as a professor. I'm going to share a few of Nikki Giovanni's most famous poems.
I was born in the Congo. I walked to the Fertile Crescent and built the Sphinx. I designed a pyramid so tough that a star that only glows every 100 years falls into the center, giving divine, perfect light. I am bad. I sat on the throne drinking nectar with Allah. I got hot and sent an ice age to Europe to cool my thirst. My oldest daughter is Nefertiti. The tears from my birth pains created the Nile. I am a beautiful woman. I gazed on the forest and burned out the Sahara Desert. With a packet of goat's meat and a change of clothes, I crossed it in 2 hours. I am a gazelle, so swift, you can't catch me. For a birthday present when he was 3, I gave my son, Hannibal, an elephant. He gave me Rome for Mother's Day. My strength flows ever on. My son Noah built New Ark, and I stood proudly at the helm as we sailed on a soft summer day. I turned myself into myself and was Jesus. Men intoned my loving name. All praises, I am the one who would save. I sowed diamonds in my backyard. My bowels deliver uranium. The filings from my fingernails are semi-precious jewels. On a trip north, I caught a cold and blew my nose, giving oil to the Arab world. I am so hip, even my errors are correct. I sailed west to reach east and had to round off the earth as I went. The hair from my head thinned and gold was laid across 3 continents. I am so perfect, so divine, so ethereal, so surreal. I cannot be comprehended except by my permission. I mean, I can fly like a bird in the sky. I have built my tower on the wings of a spider spinning slippery daydreams of paper doll fantasies. I built my tower on the beak of a dove pecking peace to a needing woman. I have built my dreams on the love of a man holding a nation in his palm asking me the time of day. I have built my castle by the shore thinking I was an oyster clam shut forever,
when this tiny grain I hardly noticed crept inside, and I spit around and spit around and spun a universe inside with a black pearl of immeasurable worth that only I could spin around. I have borne a nation on my heart, and my strength shall not be my undoing, 'cause this castle didn't crumble, and losing my pearl made me gain, and the dove flew with the olive branch by Harriet's root to my breast, and nestled close and said, "You are mine." And I was full and complete while emptying my wounds. And the sea ebbed, oh, what a pretty little baby.
Marian Anderson is broadly recognized as one of the great operatic singers and performers of classical music in living memory. She was born in Philadelphia, one of three sisters. Her father, who sold coal and ice in Reading Terminal Market, died when Anderson was 12. After this time, her mother, Annie, supported herself and her daughters, caring for young children and later working as a cleaner in the Wanamaker's department store. Anderson's talent was recognized when, as a young girl, she sang in the choir of her church, the Union Baptist Church at Fitzwater and 19th Streets in South Philadelphia. Members of the congregation raised money to support Anderson's professional training. Anderson launched her career in Europe in the 1920s, where the barriers against black artists were less onerous than they were in the United States. She was a contralto, the lowest register category of the soprano voice. The oratorio of Bach and Handel were her mainstay. So magnetic was her stage presence, and so powerful was her ability to make every sung word meaningful, that she specialized in the lofty song repertoire of Strauss, Mahler, Brahms, and Schubert. Anderson also incorporated Negro spirituals, the songs of slaves, into her repertoire, establishing songs like "Go Down Moses" and "My Lord, What a Morning" into the operatic canon. Having earned the esteem of Europe, Anderson returned to the American stage in 1935 an acclaimed star. Leading conductors, from Leopold Stokowski in Philadelphia to the young Leonard Bernstein in New York, sought to perform with her. She enjoyed an international career, performing at the inauguration of presidents of the United States and breaking many racial barriers. In 1955, she was the first black singer to perform on the stage of the Metropolitan Opera House in New York. In 1938, Howard University conferred an honorary doctorate on Anderson. The following year, the Historically Black College of Washington, D.C., sought to organize a concert with Anderson at Constitution Hall, the premier concert venue of the U.S. Capitol. When the Daughters of the American Revolution, the DAR, would not allow Anderson to sing because of her race, First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt resigned from the DAR in protest and arranged that Anderson would sing instead at the Lincoln Memorial. Anderson's performance on Easter Sunday, April 9, 1939, at the Lincoln Memorial is considered a milestone in the progress of civil rights. Her powerful phrasing of "My country, 'tis of thee," and "Land where my fathers died," was so powerful and inclusive that the concert is thought by many to be on a par of significance with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s "I Have a Dream" speech.
Programming is supported by Chanhassen Dinner Theaters, presenting Beautiful, the Carole King musical. As a woman in the music industry, King broke barriers to become one of the most prolific songwriters of our time. Featuring over 24 of her greatest hits, Beautiful is the true story of Carole King's journey from teenage songwriter to music legend. This is a full Broadway show with a cast of 29 actors. Tickets and more information at chanhassendt.com.
KFAI is proud to present Boiled and Led's 40 Years in Rock and Reel album release party at the Parkway Theater on Saturday, March 23rd. Pioneering Celtic punk folk band, Boiled and Led celebrates 40 years of rock and reel with a new live album featuring new material and radical rearrangements of old favorites. The Brian Boru Irish Pipe Band will escort Boiled and Led onto the Parkway stage. Experimental folk duo Oitacht opened the show with their signature reinterpretations of traditional Irish songs. Tickets for Boiled and Led can be found at the Parkway Theater website. Visit parkwaytheater.com for more details.
We're continuing our tribute to African and African American women on Health Notes this evening.
I'm Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer, and I farmed on the Marlowe Plantation for 18 years. I had charge of keeping up with the time and paying off, and I went down the 31st of August to try to register. And after I had gotten back home, Mr. Marlowe told me that I would have to go down and withdraw my registration or leave, because they wasn't ready for that in Mississippi. And I said, Mr. Marlowe, I'm trying to register for myself. So I had to leave that same night after I had gone down in August. And then I spent one night with Mrs. Tucker, and after about 2 days in September, they shot in the house 15 times, thinking that I was there.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Me and Pap Hamer worked on this here W.D. Marlowe Plantation, where I was his timekeeper, for 18 long years. And after several attempts to come register to vote, I was called in to come see him. Mr. D, as we had to call him, with hatred dead clean up in his eyes, he looked up at me. Fannie Lou, did you go down there to register to vote? And I took and addressed him, yes, sir, Mr. D, I did. Now, Fannie Lou, you know we ain't ready for this down here in Mississippi. Now, what you gonna do? Mr. D, I did not go down there to register for you, sir. I went down there to register for myself. But if you don't withdraw, I'm going to have to let you go. Well, I have y'all to know that I left that night, because he might not have been ready, but we had been ready down here for the last 400 years. Now, I failed that voter's registration test 2 times. And I kindly looked up at them and I informed them, you're going to see me here for the next 30 days until I pass. Well, after that, I passed. But I still wasn't allowed to register to vote, because they told me I needed 2 poll tax receipts. Well, I'll have y'all to know that I got my 2 poll tax receipts, and I was a registered voter, and I was a citizen of these here United Snakes of America. Go tell it on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain that voters registration is here. I said, go tell it on the mountain, over the hills and everywhere. Go tell it on the mountain. fighters. We all are freedom fighters.
Shine this little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
Fannie Lou Hamer, powerful activist of the 60s. She confronted the Southern racists of the Democratic Party and demanded that black people be seated at the 1964 convention. Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer.
Ain't gonna let go.
Maya Angelou.
I am grateful to have been loved and to be loved now and to be able to love because that liberates. Love liberates. It doesn't just hold. That's ego. Love liberates. When my son was born, I was 17. My mother had a huge house, 14-room house. At 17, I went to her and said, I'm leaving. She asked me, you're leaving my house? And she had live-in help. I said, yes, I've found a job, and I've got a room with cooking privileges down the hall, and the landlady will be the babysitter. She asked me, you're leaving my house? I said, yes, ma'am, and you're taking the baby? I said, yes. She said, all right, remember this. When you step over my door sill, you've been raised. You know the difference between right and wrong. Do right. Don't let anybody raise you and make you change. And remember this, you can always come home. I went home every time life slammed me down and made me call it uncle. I went home with my baby. My mother never once acted as I told you so. She said, oh, baby's home. Oh, my darling, mom's gonna cook you something. Mother's gonna make this for you. Love. She liberated me to life. She continued to do that. When my son may have been 5 years old, my mother would pick him up all the time and feed him. And I went to her once a month, and she would cook for me. So one day I went to her house, and she'd cooked red rice, which I loved. After we finished eating, we walked down the hill, and she started across the street. She said, "Wait a minute, baby." I was 22 years old. She said, "Wait a minute, baby. You know, I think you're the greatest woman I've ever met." She said, "Mary McLeod Bethune, Eleanor Roosevelt, and my mother, you're in that category." Then she said, "Give me a kiss." I gave her a kiss, and I got onto the streetcar. I can remember the way the sun fell on the slats of the wooden seats. I sat there and I thought about her. I thought, suppose she's right. She's intelligent. And she says she's too mean to lie. So suppose I am going to be somebody. She released me. She freed me to say I may have something in me that would be of value. Maybe not just to me. See? That's love. And when she was in her final sickness, I went out to San Francisco. And the doctor said she had three weeks to live. I asked her, "Would you come to North Carolina?" She said, "Yes." She had emphysema and lung cancer. I brought her to my home. She lived for a year and a half. And when she was finally, in extremis, she was on oxygen and fighting cancer for her life. And I remembered her liberating me. And I said, "I hope I'll be able to liberate her. She deserved that from me. She deserved a great daughter, and she got one." So in her last days, I said, "Now, I understand that some people need permission to go. As I understand it, you may have done what God put you here to do. You were a great worker. You must have been a great lover, because a lot of men, and if I'm not wrong, maybe a couple of women, risked their lives to love you. You were a piss-poor mother of small children, but you were a great, great mother of young adults. And if you need permission to go, I liberate you." I went back to my house, and something said, "Go back." I was in my pajamas. I jumped in my car and ran. And the nurse said, "She's just gone." You see, love liberates. It doesn't bind. Love says, "I love you. I love you if you're in China. I love you if you're cross town. I love you if you're in Harlem. I love you. I would like to be near you. I'd like to have your arms around me. I'd like to hear your voice in my ear. But that's not possible now. So I love you. Go."
Any society is how it treats its women and girls.
No man is big enough for my arms.
No man in the world. No man in the world.
No man is big enough for my arms.
The measure of any society is how it treats its women and girls.
We create
the smart, powerful, creative, accomplished young women.
We can fight.
I'm here because of you. I'm here because girls like you inspire me.
No man.
Many of these girls have faced unthinkable obstacles just to attend school. The measure of any society is how it treats its women and girls.
Won't stand still.
Your story is my story. Your story is my story.
Won't be shamed.
Your story is my story. Your story is my story. Story.
No man is big enough for love.
And I told them that they should disregard anyone who demeans or devalues them, and that they should make their voices heard in the world. The measure of any society is how it treats its women and girls.
From a black girl from the South Side of Chicago to the first black first lady in the White House, Michelle Obama is the epitome of grace and class. Born Michelle LaVon Robinson in 1964, her father was a city pump operator and her mother dedicated herself to raising her and her brother. After graduating as salutatorian of her high school, Michelle went on to Princeton and then Harvard Law School, where she earned her JD. In the summer of 1989, while working at a corporate law firm, she met Barack Obama. Michelle tried to stay professional, but eventually gave in. She and Barack dated for 2 years before their eventual marriage in October of 1992. A decade later, they had two beautiful daughters, Sasha and Malia. Michelle Obama was a hospital executive when her husband decided to run for president. In her memoir, she describes putting her career on hold and the exhaustive emotional toll of the campaign trail. It paid off because in January of 2009, Michelle Obama became the first Black First Lady of the United States. In her tenure, she would go on to campaign on important issues like education, support for veterans, and putting an end to childhood obesity. She also became a fashion icon, sporting high-end looks from Versace, Jason Wu, and Alexander McQueen. In the lead-up to the 2016 presidential election, Michelle took the spotlight during a speech at the Democratic National Convention.
When someone is cruel or acts like a bully, you don't stoop to their level. No, our motto is, when they go low, we go high.
Since she left the White House, Michelle Obama published her best-selling memoir, Becoming, and let listeners in on intimate conversations about life lessons through the Michelle Obama podcast.
Every day is so wonderful, and suddenly it's hard to breathe. Now and then I get insecure from all the pain. I'm so ashamed. I am beautiful, no matter what.
Do you love the program you're listening to right now? Who knows what other programs you might find when you visit kfai.org/schedule. Check out our broad range of programming on kfai.org.
KFAI is proud to present KMFDM at the First Avenue Main Room on Sunday, March 17th. Founded in Germany in 1984, they took the underground dancing by storm thanks to their releases on Chicago's Wax Trax Records. They rose to fame in the early 90s with tracks such as Virus, Godlike, A Drug Against War, and Juke Joint Jezebel. Opening up the show, a Chicago-based industrial band, Cyanotic. Tickets for KMFDM can be found at the First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Dr. Maya Angelou.
When you're thirsty and dry, I will come on in a crowded sick place, surrounded by evil, protected by grace. There were these hands, hundreds reaching for me.
How do I think the world would be if 1% of the world's population was complaint-free? Einstein said no genius has ever used more than 18% of the brain. But today's geophysicists say no genius has ever used more than 10% of the brain. The majority of us mumble and get around with 5, 6, 7%. If we've been able to stay alive at all, alive and future thinking, alive and having enough courage to care for each other, enough courage to love, and know that we're probably 1% free, I mean less 1% of 60 million free of complaints, imagine. Who would we be? Who would we be if we were 1% of 600 million, 6 billion? What would happen? I tell you one thing, I think war would be laughed out of the room. I think the very word, if somebody said war, another person would say, you mean, am I supposed to kill somebody because he doesn't agree with me? I don't think so. Just imagine. People would speak kinder, more kindly to each other. Courtesy would be invited back into the living room, into the bedroom, into the children's room, into the kitchen. If 1% of our world was complaint-free, we would care more about the children and realize that every child is our child. The black one and the white one, the pretty one, the plain one, the Asian and the Muslim, the Japanese and the Jewish, everyone is our child. If we were just 1% free of complaint, imagine that we would stop blaming other people for our mistakes and hating them because they caused the mistake in our minds. Just imagine if we laughed more frequently, if we had the unmitigated courage to touch each other. It would be just the beginning of paradise, you know.
Dr. Dr. Angelo reciting her poem on Pulse of Morning.
A rock, a river, a tree, hosts to species long since departed, marked the mastodon, the dinosaur, who left dry tokens of their sojourn here on our planet floor. Any broad alarm of their hastening doom is lost in the gloom of dust and ages. But today, the rock cries out to us clearly, forcefully. Come, you may stand upon my back and face your distant destiny, but seek no haven in my shadow. I will give you no hiding place down here. You, created only a little lower than the angels, have crouched too long in the bruising darkness, have lain too long face down in ignorance, your mouths spilling words armed for slaughter. The rock cries out to us today, you may stand upon me, but do not hide your face. Across the wall of the world, a river sings a beautiful song. It says, come, rest here by my side. Each of you, a bordered country, delicate and strangely made, proud, yet thrusting perpetually under siege. Your armed struggles for profit have left collars of waste upon my shore, currents of debris upon my breast. Yet today, I call you to my riverside, if you will study war no more. Come, clad in peace, and I will sing the songs the Creator gave to me when I and the tree and the rock were one. Before cynicism was a bloody sear across your brow, and when you yet knew, you still knew nothing. The river sang and sings on. There is a true yearning to respond to the singing river and the wise rock. So say the Asian, the Hispanic, the Jew, the African, the Native American, the Sioux, the Catholic, the Muslim, the French, the Greek, the Irish, the rabbi, the priest, the sheikh, the gay, the straight, the preacher, the privileged, the homeless, the teacher. They all hear the speaking of the tree. They hear the first and last of every tree speak to humankind today. Come to me here beside the river. Plant yourself beside the river. Each of you, descendant of some past on traveler, has been paid for. You who gave me my first name. You Pawnee, Apache, Seneca. You Cherokee Nation who rested with me, then forced on bloody feet, left me to the employment of other seekers, desperate for gain, starving for gold. You, the Turk, the Arab, the Swede, the German, the Eskimo, the Scot. You, the Ashanti, the Yoruba, the crew, bought, sold, stolen, arriving on a nightmare, praying for a dream. Here, root yourselves beside me. I am that tree planted by the river which will not be moved. I, the rock, I, the river, I, the tree, I am yours. Your passages have been paid. Lift up your faces. You have a piercing need for this bright morning dawning for you. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived. But if faced with courage, need not be lived again. Lift up your eyes upon this day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream. Women, children, men, take it into the palms of your hands. Mold it into the shape of your most private need. Sculpt it into the image of your most public self. Lift up your hearts. Each new hour holds new chances for new beginnings. Do not be wedded forever to fear, yoked eternally to brutishness. The horizon leans forward, offering you space to place new steps of change. Here, on the pulse of this fine day, you may have the courage to look up and out and upon me, the rock, the river, the tree, your country. No less to Midas than the mendicant, no less to you now than the mastodon then. Here, on the pulse of this new day, you may have the grace to look up and out and into your sister's eyes and into your brother's face, your country, and say simply, very simply, with hope, good morning.
I've learned a few things. First, I'm aware that I'm a child of God. It's such an amazing understanding to think that the it which made fleas and mountains and rivers and stars made me. What I pray for is humility, to know that there is something greater than I. And I have to know that the brute, the bigot, and the batterer are all children of God, whether they know it or not. And I'm supposed to treat them accordingly. And it's hard, and I blow it all the time.
Mongrel class of people!
I'd like everybody to think of a statement by Terence. The statement is, I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me. If you can internalize the least portion of that, you will never be able to say of an act, a criminal act, or I couldn't do that. No matter how heinous the crime, if a human being did it, you have to say, I have in me all the components that are in her or in him. I intend to use my energies constructively as opposed to destructively. If you can do that about the negative, just think what you can do about the positive. If a human being dreams a great dream, dares to love somebody, if a human being dares to be Martin King or Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa or Malcolm X, if a human being dares to be bigger than the condition into which she or he was born, it means so can you. And so you can try to stretch yourself. So you can internalize, a homo sum. I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me.
We are the ones, we are the ones, we've been waiting. We are the ones, we are the ones, we've been waiting. We are the ones, we are the ones, we've been waiting. We are the ones, we are the ones, we've been waiting. We are.
Many people wonder where my secret lies. I'm not cute or built to suit a fashion model size. When I try to show them, they think I'm telling lies. I say, it's in the reach of my arms, the span of my hips, the stride of my step, the curl of my lips. I'm a woman, phenomenally. I walk into a room just as cool as you please, and to a man, the fellows stand or fall down on their knees. And then they swarm around me, a hive of honeybees. I say, oh, it's the fire in my eyes, the flash of my teeth, the swing in my waist, the joy in my feet. Men themselves have wondered what they see in me. They try so much, but they can't touch my inner mystery. When I try to show them, they say they still can't see. I say, oh, it's in the arch of my back. And now you understand just why my head's not bowed. I don't shout or jump about or have to talk too loud. When you see me walking, it ought to make you proud. I say it's in the click of my heels, the bend of my hair, the palm of my hands, the need for my care, because I'm a woman, phenomenally. Phenomenal woman. That's my mother and all your mothers. And then my grandmothers, and all your grandmothers, and my great-grandmothers, and your great-grandmothers, and my great-great-great, and your great-great-great, and all you women here, and me. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies. You may trod me in the very dirt, but still like dust, I'll rise. Does my sassiness upset you? Why are you beset with gloom? Just because I walk as if I have oil wells pumping in my living room. Just like moons and like suns with the certainty of tides. Just like hope springing high, still I rise. Did you want to see me broken, bowed head and lowered eyes, shoulders falling down like teardrops, weakened by my soulful cries? Does my sassiness upset you? Don't take it so hard just because I laugh, as if I have gold mines digging in my own backyard. You can shoot me with your words, you can cut me with your lies, you can kill me with your hatefulness, but just like life, I'll rise. Does my sexiness offend you? Oh. Does it come as a surprise that I dance? As if I have diamonds at the meeting of my thighs. Out of the huts of history's shame, I rise. Up from a past rooted in pain, I rise. A black ocean leaping and wide, welling and swelling and bearing in the tide. Leaving behind nights of terror and fear, I rise. Into a daybreak miraculously clear, I rise. Bringing the gifts that my ancestors gave, I am the hope and the dream of the slave. And so, wow. There I go.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM. Minneapolis, St. Paul. Online and archived at kfai.org. It's where community grows.